April 14, 1865. The war was over, the Union saved, and Abraham Lincoln finally allowed himself to dream of the future. That same evening, a charismatic actor stood in a darkened theater hallway, peering through a carved peephole at the back of the president's head. Within hours, America's greatest leader would be dying in a cramped boarding house room, and a nation's hope would die with him. This isn't just another assassination story. It's the tale of how 12 days of chaos, courage, and conspiracy forever altered the American experiment. Through meticulous detail and heart-pounding narrative, we witness not just a murder, but the death of reconciliation itself. By April 1865, Lee's Army of Northern Virginia had dwindled to 30,000 starving men. When Petersburg fell, he fled across the Appomattox River, still believing he could defeat Grant. What followed was a nightmare, a 20-mile column of desperate men harassed by Union cavalry, drenched by rain, dropping from exhaustion. At Amelia Courthouse, they tore open supply crates expecting food, only to find ammunition. This single logistical failure sealed their fate. The most savage fighting erupted at Sailor's Creek on Black Thursday, hand-to-hand combat so brutal that men bayoneted, clubbed, and bit each other's throats. By nightfall, Lee had lost 8,000 men, including his eldest son. On Palm Sunday, April 9, cornered at Appomattox Courthouse with 8,000 men facing Grant's 60,000, Lee surrendered. "I would rather die 1,000 deaths," he said. Grant offered generous terms: "Put down your weapons and go home." When Lee returned to his troops, they cheered, then sobbed. The war was over, but a darker chapter was beginning. While Washington celebrated, John Wilkes Booth stood alone at a pistol range, firing his Derringer with methodical fury. The 26-year-old actor, handsome, charismatic, son of theatrical royalty, seethed over Confederate defeat. His kidnapping plot was now pointless. Assassination became his new mission. Booth was engaged to Lucy Hale, daughter of a pro-Union senator who knew nothing of his Confederate sympathies. He was a celebrated performer who could have had anything, yet hatred consumed him. On April 11, when Lincoln suggested voting rights for educated blacks and Union veterans, Booth turned to companion Lewis Powell. "Shoot him now." Powell refused. "I'll put him through. By God, I'll put him through," Booth sneered. Lincoln lived with constant death threats. His desk contained over 80 assassination letters. "If I am killed, I can die but once," he told friends, "but to live in constant dread is to die over and over again." That week, he described a haunting dream: wandering the White House, hearing subdued sobbing, finding a corpse in the East Room. When he asked who died, a soldier answered, "The president. He was killed by an assassin." April 14th dawned perfect, warm spring weather, birds singing, hope in the air. Lincoln rose at 7 a.m., read scripture, and savored rare extended time with Mary and son Robert at breakfast. Despite severe weight loss, he was relaxed and happy. During an afternoon carriage ride, he told Mary, "We have had a hard time of it since we came to Washington, but the war is over, and with God's blessing, we may hope for 4 years of peace and happiness." For the first time, he spoke of future plans: a trip to Palestine, returning to Illinois to practice law. Meanwhile, Booth finalized his plan. After securing his getaway horse, he galloped recklessly down Pennsylvania Avenue. Spotting General and Mrs. Grant leaving town, eliminating one of his targets, he glared so intensely that Julia Grant would later recall, "the crazed man who stared us down." Despite Mary's headache and the Grants' cancellation, Lincoln felt obligated to attend Ford's Theater. Before departing, he made a chilling confession to bodyguard William Crook. "I believe there are men who want to take my life, and I have no doubt that they will do it." When Crook expressed hope he was mistaken, Lincoln replied, "If it is to be done, it is impossible to prevent it." These were the last words Lincoln would ever speak to his bodyguard, words that haunt history. At 8:25 p.m., Lincoln arrived at Ford's Theater to thunderous applause. Bodyguard John Parker then abandoned his post for a saloon, a dereliction for which he'd never be punished. At 10 p.m., Booth entered, visibly nervous, but charmed the ticket taker with his celebrity status. He ascended to the dress circle, passing two Union officers who recognized but didn't stop him. Finding the state box unguarded, he jammed a wooden music stand against the door and peered through a peephole he'd carved earlier, staring at the back of Lincoln's head just 4 feet away. At 10:15 p.m., as the audience laughed at a punchline, Booth fired his derringer. The ball entered behind Lincoln's left ear, traveling diagonally across his brain. When Major Rathbone confronted him, Booth slashed him with a knife. Leaping toward the stage, Booth caught his spur in the flag, falling and breaking his left fibula. Despite his injury, he brandished his knife, declared, "The South shall be free," and limped across the stage as chaos erupted, women fainting, men climbing over seats, cries of "Hang the scoundrel!" filling the air. Despite his broken leg, Booth escaped into the night. Dr. Charles Lael, just 23 and a physician for only 2 months, reached Lincoln first. After emergency resuscitation, straddling Lincoln's chest, clearing his airway, even performing mouth-to-mouth, he solemnly announced, "His wound is mortal." 4 soldiers carried the president to William Peterson's boarding house, laying him diagonally across a bed too small for his frame. Throughout the night, officials and family rotated through while Mary wept beside her husband. At 7:21 a.m. on April 15, 1865, Lincoln drew his final breath. Secretary of War Edwin Stanton declared, "Now he belongs to the ages." Stanton immediately launched the biggest criminal dragnet in American history, posting a $30,000 reward. Booth and accomplice David Harold fled to Maryland, hiding at Dr. Samuel Mudd's house where Booth's broken leg was splinted, then disappearing into Zekia Swamp. Over 1,400 soldiers entered the treacherous swamps. Incredibly, 87 drowned during this week-long search. What devastated Booth most wasn't the manhunt, but the newspapers. Rather than being celebrated, he was labeled a coward for shooting Lincoln in the back. Even anti-Lincoln papers now portrayed Lincoln as a hero. After 6 days, Booth and Harold crossed the Potomac into Virginia, running out of places to hide. On April 26th, 12 days after the assassination, federal cavalry cornered Booth and Harold at Richard Garrett's farmhouse. Trapped in a barn at 2 a.m., Harold surrendered, earning Booth's disgust. "Go away from me, damned coward." As flames consumed the barn, Sergeant Boston Corbett, a religious zealot who'd once castrated himself, disobeyed orders and shot Booth through the neck, severing his spinal cord. The paralyzed actor died by morning, his body thrown into a garbage wagon. John Wilkes Booth's life ended at just 26. After a 7-week trial featuring 366 witnesses, Mary Surratt, Lewis Powell, George Atzerodt, and David Harold were sentenced to hang. On July 7, 1865, they climbed the gallows. "Mrs. Surratt is innocent," Powell cried. Mary begged, "Please don't let me fall." When the trapdoors opened, her neck didn't break immediately. She swung for 5 agonizing minutes, becoming the first woman ever hanged by the United States government. Lincoln's body traveled by train to Illinois, stopping in 12 cities and drawing millions of mourners. His assassination robbed America of its greatest leader when his wisdom was most needed. Lincoln's legacy of preserving the Union and ending slavery far outlasted Booth's desperate act, proving that while hatred may claim momentary victories, love and justice ultimately prevail.